Welcome back to 96.5, the Fan, the Fans Football Show. Jay Binkley, Mitch Schwartz, Desmond Moses. These guys, former Chiefs, come up here and sign up for the 4-foot bobblehead as well for Travis Kelce that they're giving away as well. And have a Bud Light, 20 ounces for $5, thanks to Bud Light there. Thanks to Quentin Morse producing the operation. Awesome job by you, Quentin. The Cooper Cup talk was kind of funny. And obviously the game last night with the Vikings. Derek Shaw gets hurt from the Vikings. Here's a team that's lost two in a row. You know, it's so tough to be. They were the darling. There's always the flavor of the week in the NFL.
Sure.
And Buffalo was that last year quite a bit, but yet they had to go to the last game of the year to be the second seed or be out of the playoffs. So there's always the flavor of the week. Well, the Rams find a way to win. McVay finds a way to win. And those guys want to win. Like D-Rob out there doing his stuff. Cooper Kupp comes back. Puka Nacua comes back in that game. I think that game actually helped the Chiefs. Because Cooper Kupp, you know, people like Steelers are looking at Cooper Kupp because they want to bring in a receiver and stuff like that. But why would you trade anybody off? It doesn't look like they're going to. They're sitting there 3-4, they're only one game back in the division.
Well, I mean, there was a discussion before that. If you lose it, you're 2-5. That obviously the NFC West has been a little more, beat up than we expected. It seemed like it was going to be really a two-team race. I thought Arizona would be third, and I thought Seattle would be last. But they're all just basically floating around right there around 500. It did look ugly for the Rams. And obviously, when you're down, at parts of the year, 3-0 linemen, and you're down your two best receivers, I don't know what offense is going to look good with that. You know, we see our offense doesn't look dynamic when our, top two receivers are down. Our offense never looks good when we have, three starting offensive linemen down. So they had the combination of those two things. Not going to be great. But they're getting healthier. And that's the thing with Cooper Kupp and the trade is when he's on the field, he's still awesome. He's a great receiver. He
Absolutely.
Shows that. Can anyone use him as well as McVay does? Probably not. The stuff he does blocking, he becomes a fullback at times, essentially coming across the formation, having a point of attack on some of the duo runs and being able to dig out safeties and, play big body out there. And then utilizing that in the pass game. So no one's probably going to get as much value out of, Kupp as McVay has. And then you have to worry about the injury history in terms of trading for him, and you have to worry about the salary. So all those combined made him a less likely trade candidate, aside from the fact that you're the Rams. McVay has talked about retiring the last few years. Stafford's getting up there with an age and his body and all that stuff.
Which is funny because he's been crazy.
Yeah, but it's like
my age.
if you're the Rams and if you're trading Cooper Kupp, then why would Stafford – stay? Why would he finish the season? If you're saying
that's
you're going to take away
status.
My best guy, like why am I still here trying to fight through the season? So it was kind of a weird messaging to put out there, but I mean, like everything, there's a price on anybody. So if someone came to us and said, we'll give you the next 14 first-round picks for Chris Jones, we'd probably accept that. that there's a price for everybody.
Speaking of flavor of the week, it's Baltimore right now. People are saying, is Baltimore the best team? Last year, Baltimore had set a record for beating teams by double digits, like in a row. Like, they had seven double-digit wins. That was a good defense last year. And, Derrick Henry's there. He makes a big difference. I get that. But it's not like they can't run. This team set the NFL record in rushing offense a couple of years ago. They can run. And Derrick Henry does make a difference. But they're 32nd in pass defense. They're 14 yards a game behind the Jags. Like, Jags are 31st, they're 32nd. They're 25th in points against. That defense was much better in Baltimore last year. I don't care that Henry's there or whatever. It's still a tough team, but everybody seems to love Baltimore, even though the Chiefs have beat them on the football field.
You know what? Baltimore's always been tough, and I think this year they'll be the same way. But, again, I don't think this defense is as dominant as they have been in the past.
Not close.
The numbers indicate that. And, you watch the game, these guys just aren't as physical. They don't impose the will the same. Now, offensively, they still got 300-pound fullbacks, and, they still set that tone the same way. You got to tackle King Henry 30 times a game. It's tough. I think their offense is quite a bit better, and that might be the difference in them being a better team. But, again, they got to get over the Kansas City hump. Baltimore will never be any good unless Lamar can play his best football versus Patrick Mahomes.
How do you stop Derrick Henry, man? He's gone over 20 miles an hour, like a couple runs.
Stop him before he gets started.
I'm about to say, that's the key to the drill, man. You've got to hit him before he gets
there. In high school, it's funny because he was a man amongst boys. Like, he was this big, and they're both so small.
So the interesting thing earlier in his Tennessee career is Deion Lewis was actually the better short yardage running back than Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Henry isn't lateral shiftiness, isn't.
Not in a hole.
No, so it's 3rd and 1 and things are muddy and you got to all of a sudden, you think it's an A-gap run and the C-gap on the backside pops open and your feet are already in the line. It's hard for him to then get to the C-gap. So he was never the best, third and one, fourth and run back, you have to design specific plays where he can just sledgehammer ahead. But in terms of kind of finding those creases, so, yeah, the thing with him has always been don't get him started.
Yeah.
Tennessee ran amazing outside zone, you know, back when they had Luan, Saffold, Ben Jones, you know, the guys on the right side. They were rolling, and they would create huge gaps for him. And he would hit at full speed like we're seeing now, and you just couldn't stop him. And for whatever reason, he's 6'4", 260, and he's the fastest guy in the NFL once he's 10 yards past the line of scrimmage and has a full head of steam. And if you try to tackle him, he'll just stiff-arm you into oblivion. Yeah. So, yeah, the only way to stop him is to not let him get started.
That's the one guy that I looked at. It's usually the teams think about their quarterback.
Yeah.
Like Derrick Henry, when he's at Tennessee, that was the one guy that, outside of being a quarterback, I looked at, that team rotates on him. That team goes how he goes.
I mean, he's
100%
it. He's that effective, but, I mean, let's be clear. Kansas City did a heck of a job against
him. They've done that way in the playoffs against him, too.
Only one guy's got over 100 yards, and that's a quarterback.
Maybe it's Lamar Jackson. They shut down Mason this week.
Yeah.
With Henry, though, it's always been when his O-line was good, he was good. Mm-hmm. I'm saying he's a better running back than most, but just in terms of, like, the last couple of years, oh, did he fall off? He's not being as good. No, the O-line was terrible, and they weren't running the ball as effectively, and so obviously he's not going to have those holes to break the big runs. Did he become a better running back after the first 2 weeks of the season when everyone was talking about, oh, Henry doesn't fit there, Baltimore doesn't know how to use him? No, he's the same freaking guy.
Yeah.
They just figured out how to use him, and they're blocking better.
He wasn't washed.
And they figured out the offense. So it's still an offensive line-driven league in terms of running games. The running backs matter, and they're important, and they can make special things happen. But this is the Saquon thing with New York. Saquon would be looking terrible in New York right now because New York can't run the ball. So what's Saquon going to do behind a line that can't open holes?
Yeah.
But this is why he was a great fit in Philly, because Philly creates a ton of space, both in terms of the scheme of the offense, the separation. Jalen doesn't really run the ball as well anymore, so you're not getting quite that, you know, stretch horizontally and all that. But, like, the O-line's still awesome. So if you can drive guys 3 yards off the ball and create horizontal separation, and you have a home run hitter who's dynamic at running back, that's, like, the perfect scheme for him. So, of course, he looks better now.
And Philly does a great job of getting him the ball in a lot of different ways. Short passes, screens. I mean, you know, you get Saquon out in space, you see what he does to the league.
It was a great move. He got the angry run this week, the scepter. He got it from Mahomes.
Is that right?
That was the decision.
Mahomes should have got it.
Yeah, they gave it to Saquon. I would give it to Mahomes as well.
It was a revenge game for him. I get it.
It was a revenge game for him. What have you noticed in this team the last 2 weeks? Obviously, they had their way in with the Saints. Score was much closer than what it should have been, and this could have been a complete and total blow. Obviously, it was a 13-point swing on that interception to Colin Saunders. But this week, I mean, it was a tough physical game. They won by 10. Over Frisco, they were injured. The Chiefs were injured too. I mean, so be it. I mean, I haven't really heard that excuse from people. What have you noticed? Like, we talked about the inside zone running for this team. Kareem gets 22 more carries. They're relying heavily on those three guys in the middle to run the football. What have you noticed the last couple weeks offensively from this team?
Yeah, it's the ability to run the ball, and I think it was Alex Smith said it somewhere this week. The Chiefs offense isn't the Chiefs offense we're used to. We've talked about this, you know, the last few weeks. We talked about it earlier today. But teams are still playing them as if they're the Chiefs offense. And they're still having safeties deep and the threat of Mahomes and the threat of Worthy. And so we are finally taking full advantage of having two high safeties and not having that extra guy in the box and always having a number count advantage. And that's where, again, in shotgun, you tend to lose that advantage, especially if you're running inside zone, because you have to figure out a way to block that backside defensive end. Typically, if you're running inside zone from under center, you know, you got a backside tight end or you got a guy coming across the formation to seal it. In shotgun, you don't always necessarily have that. You have to build that in, and it's just not as prevalent. You tend to do it more with QB reads, and so now the, you know, defensive end is put in a bind. He's got to play both. Because we don't run QB reads anymore and our quarterback doesn't keep it to run. That's not a part of the package. So running from shotgun inside the tackles has to come from some way. You're going to either have to keep a tight end to block on the backside, or you're going to have to go to more gap scheme-oriented runs, which, again, uses a tight end in some capacity in most cases. So we're finding our way with what the scheme needs to be to run out of shotgun. You know, to your point earlier, we're running more 13, 14 personnel, getting under center more, playing more with, you know, larger people in the field, and then meshing what the O-line does well with what the defense is presenting us with what our running backs are doing well. And it's been fun to watch because, I mean, since I've been in Kansas City, everyone says, oh, run the ball more, you throw too much.
Yeah, I'm one of those people.
But it's, I mean, it's always been for us up front, like, you have to prove that it's worth running the ball more.
Sure.
You adapt to what you have. I mean, I remember last year the Raiders game. I mean, there's a fork in the road. either a downfall, you lose the Raiders and you feel sorry for yourself in the Bengals, or you go dynasty mode, and they chose dynasty mode.
Yeah, so the other thing, which is interesting if you look at it, the whole – so one of the mantras is, you know, 2 and 3 yard runs in the first quarter, turn into 3 and 4 yard runs in the second quarter, turn into 5 to 8 yard runs in the third quarter, turn into 10-plus yard runs in the fourth quarter because you wear on the defense and you wear them out. If you actually look at the data, that's not the case at all. Run plots are scattered pretty evenly distributed. And if anything, in the fourth quarter, kind of dips down because you get into 4-minute modes and teams are more conservative and you know you're going to run the ball. So, again, from Andy Reid's perspective, if you're running the offense and calling the plays, if runs are in the 2 to 4 yard range in the first quarter, that's the way they're going to be all game. There's no point in just keep handing off and taking away the ability to throw the ball. And balance isn't running 50% of the time and throwing 50% of the time. Balance is on any given play. I can throw deep, throw short, throw intermediate, play action, run inside, run outside, jet sweep, screen. That is balance. It's not just it has to be one is a run, one's a pass. It's doing all those different things. And within that, there are more options throwing the football than there are running the football. So I would say we've always had a relatively balanced offense. The numbers get thrown off because of the RPOs.
Yeah.
It's always going to look more pass-heavy than it was, even though he's historically, before RPOs, been, you know, north of 55%. But that's just the way things are.
I think we become more physical on offense, though, when we run the ball. I mean, it's a commitment. As a defender, you know, you feel the effect of an offense that's committed to running
the
football.
They're beating people up. You know, like Baltimore, you see.
These guys are 350 pounds. Well, you got to come off and cobra strike these guys.
When your quarterback's legging fools out, I mean, you're a physical team.
Unequivocally. You know, I know, obviously, Mitch believes in, you know, having ability. Balance can look a number of ways. But, you know, I truly believe just imposing your will on a team has an effect over the you know, course of a game. Oh, I truly believe that.
What have you noticed?
It does, but it doesn't if you're not successful.
If
you run the ball,
we've had 15 success.
If you run the ball in the first half 15 times for 38 yards, you're going to go in that half and you're going to get chewed out by your O-line coach and your coordinator. You're not physical enough. We're not opening the hole. All that stuff. So again, you have to prove that the run is working to keep having it coming. Because if you went into the half as a defensive player and you just held the other team 15 carries, 38 yards, hey, guys, great job.
Excited.
You're dominating up front. Let's keep it up. So, again, just bashing your head in the wall because we got to establish physicality. We got to establish the run. If it's not working, it's not working. And, unfortunately, we just haven't been good enough, you know, when I was here and the last few years, offensive line-wise, to prove that this is worth sticking with because it's going to average 4.5 yards throughout the course of the game.
What have you noticed, Desmond? Because one of the best breakdowns I can ever remember anybody giving on the Chiefs was Steve Young, when he was talking about, you know, it's back when the, you know, defenses started to change, two eye safeties and stuff, but the Chiefs were still leading the league in points per drop. I mean, they found a way to adapt. And Steve Young was talking about it, like when he was running the West Coast offense, you know, defenses found a way to kind of adjust and slow it down, and they readjusted out of that when they were doing that West Coast offense. What have you noticed from defense? Because defense has clearly changed a lot when you have a lot more safety-type players. I mean, you were kind of at the cutting edge of it when it's different, but I mean, it used to be, you know, the Harry Carsons of the world, you know, 255-pound linebackers and stuff like that. But
guys are smaller, faster.
How are teams going against Chiefs lately? I know the Chiefs run a lot of nickel. Matter of fact, a lot of times they put their depth chart out in the nickel. What are they doing against this team?
You know, as far as defensively, you're seeing a lot more teams, like you're saying, two high safeties. You're seeing these teams put their eyes on Patrick Mahomes, see him. There's a lot less back to the quarterbacks because he can make those throws. He can throw guys open, and those spaces are just a little bit tougher. When you have safeties looking down at your quarterback, they're able to feel and play a little bit better, crunch down some of those windows between the linebacker and safety. But I think Kansas City's just done a good job of taking what the defense is giving them. That's what you have to do and be willing to do. Otherwise, you're going to turn the football over if you think you can force it into those windows when guys are looking at you.
And Pat's admitted to that. He said, I probably get to my shorter stuff quicker because I know what the defense is. Yeah. I know that 1, 2, and 3 are going to be covered. And the smart play on this one is just to get it off to the running back and let him go, or to get it off to this guy who's going to be open. So, you know, having to stick through the progressions to see if the defense breaks down because you're so smart that you know that, like, theoretically, that guy's not going to be open, this guy's not going to be open, this third read's going to be open. It's kind of a funny, you know, dichotomy there. It's interesting. I think, again, teams want to have eyes on him. We saw last week he still is a rushing threat. If you're playing, you know, there was a point where you could say, oh, let's play two-man and let's rush him with four and get home and let's man up all the other guys on the outside, but still have the two high safeties to
those
guard.
Those days are over.
No, those days are over. So now teams, if they want to run a version of two-man, they're going to only rush three. They're going to have one guy, whether it's a linebacker or a defensive end or someone, kind of pop out, spy him,
yeah,
so that if guys are covered, they can make sure he's, you know, not maneuvering the pocket too well. And if he feels a void of space, if he takes off, there's going to be someone there to guard against him. So I think the biggest thing is taking away deep stuff, forcing him to, you know, play a more boring version of football. And then also the pick stunts up front and kind of forcing him to maneuver the pocket and then having guys over the top for when he likes to break contain.
Sure.
They're getting smarter. I mean, defenses, you've seen it in general. For 10 years, it was offensive evolution, offense, offense, offense. We're on attack. We got guys in motion. We got a bunch of stuff happening at the snap. Now that's happening defensively.
Yeah.
So the onus is on the offense to figure out what's happening post-snap. And there are route combinations that if it's cover one, if it's cover three, if it's cover four, you're going to have three different things you have to do. And now the ball snapped. Some crazy rotation happens. It spins late. You and the quarterback have to see the coverage at the same time, be on the same page, and run the route to where you both expect it. So there's a lot of moving parts, and defenses have just gotten a lot smarter and realized, like, hey, we can be on attack defensively.
But you know what? I think that's where Andy helps with the pre-snap movement and the window dressing. It helps those young guys see what defense you're in. When you see some of those defenders have to travel, that tells those guys immediately, okay, they're in man or some version of it.
Coming up next, we'll take a break. We're at the Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe. I want to ask you guys about the Kermit the Frog puppet thing that I think everybody's making too big of a deal of it. We'll talk about that stuff next here at the Fans Football Show. Welcome back to 96.5, the Fans Football Show. Jay Binkley, Mitch Schwartz, Desmond Moses here with me at Buffalo Wild Wings, 12110 South Stringline Road in Olathe, Kansas. Great Buffalo Wild Wings. Come in here and get that 20 ounces of Bud Light for just $5 when we're doing the show, and sign up for that Chiefs neon Bud Light Super Bowl sign that you can put in your, well, I'd put it in my living room at this point, but you can walk away with that tonight. Sign up for that Travis Kelce 4-foot bobblehead as well. All right, guys, we told Desmond about the puppet thing. I mean, it's always funny, like the Mahomes, like, does he take notes on this? Because we've seen him count before in Chicago where he's drafted. When he becomes petty Mahomes, you know, when he does that kind of stuff. But Trey Taylor does it. He's a rookie, seventh-round pick. I will say this about Trey Taylor. You guy's actually a decent dude. You guy graduated from Air Force Academy. And he knows what he's doing. He's going to be a C-17 pilot. But he took advantage of that loophole because you can play in the NFL right away if you're a service academy. Now the rule reverted back where you had to do 2 years of active duty and then play in the NFL. But he's been grandfathered in where he can go to the NFL and then do his military service later. So some fan had the Muppet and looked like Patrick Mahomes, and he kind of had fun with his voice and stuff. But does that stuff matter? Does the ring around when Gruden took the team on the bus around the stadium, does this stuff actually matter, Mitch and Desmond, when teams do that? I mean, does it drive you any motivation?
Depends on the guy. We have a long history, to your point, of Pat taking those things personally and using those things as fuel. And
it reminds me of Jordan, and I took it personally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people say, oh, you shouldn't need to do that, and some are like, oh, it's awesome that, you know, he's that competitive. And every guy gets up for different reasons. I was a fear of failure guy. If I didn't do my job, the MVP of the league got hurt. So it's like that's what motivated me every day. Some guys need to feel like they're slighted. Some guys, it's just everyone has a different motivation.
Yeah.
And you know, someone like Pat, he's shown that he hears the stuff that's out there. He sees it. He uses that as motivation. This is a pretty innocuous thing. Like, a fan had a little Kermit thing at training camp, and the guy took it and probably said some stuff he regrets.
But being a rookie, I think that it wasn't like Max Crosby did this.
Well,
so
but
rookie.
It's also funnier that that's how it came about. It's not like someone who had ever played against him either. So, yeah, probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. I guarantee it's remembered this week, and there's a little more oomph in some of the preparations. But yeah, it's. I don't know if you were one of those guys that cared about those things, but I always got motivation from within. It didn't matter what other guys were saying or whatever.
Same because of rat poison.
I mean, at the end of the day, would you poke a bear in the wild? I mean, you know, Patrick Mahomes is one of those guys, like you said, you can tell, a lot like Michael Jordan, he uses any and everything to get up, to get going. He wasn't the first overall pick. You know, he still has that chip on his shoulder, which is part of his greatness.
Yeah, he's ranked fourth in the NFL top 100, which they vote in November or whatever, which wasn't playing real good right then, but they should wait till the end of the season, but I digress.
At the end of the season, we're not there anymore to vote on it. So.
Yeah, you're not there to vote on it. Did you take it seriously when you voted on the top 100, Mitch?
The first, like, three or four, and then from there, you just... Well, okay, so you get a sheet of paper.
Right. It's the most longest.
It's 1 through 20. There's, you know, 1 through 20, 1 through 10 on the left side.
Pre-practice.
1 through 20 on the right. Yeah, it's along with all the Pro Bowl stuff. Yeah. On the left side and the right side of the extremities of the paper are all the team helmets. So it's like you're just blind being asked who are the 20 best players in the NFL this year. Some guys don't watch football. Well, to be fair, not everyone fills it out. You kind of just, you know, if you want to fill it out, you can. If you don't want to, some guys literally put down 20 of their friends. Some guys put down all their favorite guys from one team. Some guys don't do it all. Like, it is not, it's just dumb. Like, people should not be taking these top 100 lists at the end of the year and putting any meaning in that.
I think they always did because it was players doing it, right? Yeah. They took it seriously. I mean, when you say their
what
mansion,
do, what do we
what
know?
Do they know, right?
I know.
So,
you're not watching the other game.
I'm supposed to be able to tell you which, if Sauce Gardner is as good at his job as Mahomes is at his versus Derrick Henry versus Tyreek. Like, I can't do that. I don't watch everything. So, yeah, the whole idea of it is dumb.
Yeah.
Nick Saban, he always calls it rat poison because everybody's telling how good they are all the time. And finally they didn't because they were talking about Georgia. But I never forget, like, when the Royals were on their run in 14, when they went to 15, everybody liked them at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Christian Colon or something saw some writer somewhere put the Royals way down the list and was, and they used that as motivation because they couldn't find really anybody saying anything bad about the team. And the Chiefs have had that, you know, problem through the years. Everybody's billing them up and talking about how good they are.
Yeah.
Well, now they have that, you know, negativity. I don't know if you're on social media ever. I mean, people are always, oh, the Chiefs get all the calls, blah, blah, blah. Mahomes having a rough year. Now they have motivation if they wanted to, but I don't know how much stock people put into that. Because I once asked Brett Phillips, who played for the Royals, said, you ever look at social media? He goes, yeah, when I make a bad play, I hate to do it. Like, I hate to open it up and look at that to get motivation, but I would think that would kind of work for some guys.
Well, some of the young guys do, and that's the thing as a vet. You try to tell them, hey, you know, stay away from that social media. Don't buy into any of that stuff. But even last year, I mean, there were a lot of people that was critical to Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, we had the highest drop rate in the National Football League. And you know, quite frankly, we were critical of some of the guys that helped make those game-winning plays in the Super Bowl. But Kansas City did exactly what they needed to. They went out in the offseason, got better at that position. Obviously, you can't control injuries. But Kansas City's continuing to get better. I think this year, again, there's still something that they can hang their hat on or have a chip on their shoulder about, and it's the injuries. Nobody thinks Kansas City can do it, but again, they continue to get better. The rich getting richer. They brought in a guy like Kareem Hunt. Now they have a guy like D-Hop.
They never drop. He's got the best hands, in my opinion.
Oh, man. Catch radius. I mean,
for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
This Andy Reid just seems... When he got here, he, like, had that cred. I mean, the guys respected kind of what he did and everything. He strikes me as a guy that would be kind of a player's coach, too. You know, you see the fun side of him in the State Farm commercials and all that. But he also has this disciplinary side as well.
There's two sides.
And I always respect coaches that don't throw their teams under the bus. Like, Ned Yost never did. He would always wait before he came in. The way baseball works, they go in the clubhouse and talk to him. And then the media would go down there and wait. And it always seems like Ned kind of knew the direction they were going. Like, they're going to talk about, you know, the green light to steal bases and why Escobar got thrown out and stuff. But Ned would always blame himself. Like, hey, you know, I gave him that signal. Which we know deep down, like, he didn't do it. But they took the blame, and Reid kind of takes the blame, too. I don't know how he is kind of off the mic, if he takes these things to heart, or is he just kind of like, okay. Because we saw Kareem Hunt fumble in New England, and he puts him right back in. Is he good with that kind of stuff, or does you think things harbor with Andy Reid?
No, things don't harbor. There aren't many things that need to get addressed. Like, I feel like people don't like things. The life cycle of things that need to get addressed is really quick. And, you know, the last few years it was, you know, oh, Pat and EB on the sideline, or Travis and whoever, and Travis and coach, Travis and EB. Like, it's very emotional. People get frustrated. Tempers flare. You get out what you need to, and then you hug, and then it's passed. You know, there are times where guys aren't doing the right thing. It gets addressed, and it's over. Like, there are very few things that the head coach has to truly tell the team or discipline the team for or get in front of, especially to your point, like Coach Reid came in with an established, you know, idea of what he's been as a coach, and then established, I wasn't here for it, but establishes the culture very quickly, brings in a guy like Alex who can, you know, be the leader, and, you know, had other guys defensively who were able to take on that role as well. And so there isn't a ton that you have to do day to day as the head coach when you have a great team with great leadership. So the few times throughout the year that something happened or that something really needed to get addressed, he addresses it, and then everyone moves on from
it. So the locker room places itself when you have that many leaders.
Well, you know what? I think Mitch came in a special time. Like you said, he came in after they won championships. He was part of that championship culture. I played here Andy's first 4 years when he was building it.
Yeah,
there was a feisty side of, you know, to Andy. And
2012 was bleak before Andy came
in. I felt the wrath before. You know, I've been one-on-one with Andy inside of a room where, you know, he's not happy. But, again, you have to build that culture, and it takes time to get to the point where Mitch and those guys came in and there was great leadership. You had the winning culture. You know, at that point, you kind of in cruise control, especially as a coach. You could depend on these guys around you to support that culture.
And coaches get more mellow with age, typically.
For sure.
So, you know, I came in 4 years after the culture was established and winning was established. So it was a little bit easier for me.
Todd Haley used to be here, and it was right before Romeo. And it was just kind of that 2012 year was rough with the Chiefs. The fans booing Matt Castle and all that. We had the Inside Edition come up to the radio station, which never happens, but they wanted to hear about that. It was a rough year. I mean, they were compared to the 1927 Buffalo Bisons, never holding the lead to like nine games. But it just seemed like Todd Haley was always trying to prove himself. Like he was, played golf in college and stuff like that. It always seemed like he was just trying to establish himself. And that's what it kind of seemed like. But when Reed got here, this guy's already been there, done that. It seemed like a culture shift between the coach really trying to prove themselves.
Yeah, I mean, again, Des can speak to that better than I can. But in terms of coaches, if the coach has an ego and he feels like it's about himself, it's never going to work out. Yeah. If the coach feels like they have to show everyone how smart they are, or they need to, you know, wax poetic in press conferences and all these things, it's not going to turn out well. The players are going to sniff through that immediately. The guys who are genuine, the guys who are themselves, are going to be successful. That's why the Belichick guys were never successful, because they tried to emulate Belichick. They weren't themselves. Sirianni, for better or worse, is himself. I think that's why guys bought in initially. Then it gets a little bit grating, and now they're trying to tell him, like, you have to be yourself again, because the tamed down version of you is probably worse than you just being a Philly guy. But yeah, there's an authenticity that you can see if the guy is truly authentic. If he's trying to be something different, if he thinks he's better than you or smarter than you or he should be the focal point, it's not going to work. And that's something that I think, you know, again, I came in 20-plus years in a coach's coaching tenure, but he never seemed like a guy, going back to his Philly days, that felt like he needed to be the spotlight. If he did the right things, he would be seen in that role. And it takes, you know, a certain kind of selflessness as the head coach to make it all about the players, and also, to your point, not sell out the players when it could be very easy.
Yeah, we'll take a timeout. We're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe, Kansas next week. We'll be out in Lee Summit. Mitch Schwartz, Desmond Moses, former Chiefs, here with me. I do want to talk about the AFC West, though, a little bit. Like, AFC West 2.0. I call it 2.0 because 1.0 didn't work. Now it's 2.0. But the future of this division, I am curious, can anybody compete with the Chiefs? We'll talk about that next. Welcome back to 96.5, The Fan, The Fan's football show, 913-586-7965, the J. Southland Tow Service text line. We're out here in South Stringline Road, out in Olathe, Kansas, Lee Summit. Next week, we're going all over. We're going to be in St. Joe in a little bit. We're going to back up to Zona Rosa. We're going to be all over the place at different Buffalo Wild Wings where you can stop in, register for some great prizes, or get that 20 ounces of Bud Light for just $5. So make sure you come out here and get some wings. I know that Mitch and I do enjoy the food here. Desmond seems to like it as well when he's not spilling all over himself.
And others.
But we're others. But it was just water.
Sprite.
I was telling you, earlier, one time Fesco had that smokehouse like Cajun butter, and I spilt it all over the studio. I never forget, like, cling when he came in. Because it's hard to clean that up, man. It was like this Cajun
butter. It's hard to clean,
but
I bet that smelled good for the next
one. It smelled like Cajun butter in that studio.
So Sprite. Mitch's foot is sticking to the ground right now.
Mitch, sorry, it helps me build the quad muscles I've been neglecting.
But come out here and have fun. Get a picture with Mitch and Desmond. Have a lot of fun with that. Chiefs fans are absolutely unbelievable. It's fun to see. All right, AFC West 2.0, 1.0. Clearly, we talked about a little bit last week. That was bringing in, for the Raiders, Chandler Jones, Devontae Adams, Josh McDaniels when he came. You know, for Chargers, Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson came out. All that stuff scrapped. You know, new coach, got Sean Payton out in Denver.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson's gone. It's 2.0 in this division. Tom Brady comes in. Evidently, Mark Davis wants him to be instrumental in the front office. We'll see how that works. I mean, it's always tougher for those guys that did it. to like do it in the front office. So I am curious what direction they're going to go at quarterback, because clearly that's going to be an emphasis. And Belichick's been talked about a lot because of, you know, Brady and everything. I keep saying no. He wants to catch Shula, and he wants a quarterback, man. I mean, he's at that age now where he's not going to be messing around with grooming a quarterback, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think if you're talking about Patriot connections, I think Vrabel makes more sense.
Vrabel makes a ton of sense.
The Raiders than anybody else. I think he's a better culture setter than Antonio Pierce. I mean, he's shown, again, proof of that. He took really not-so-talented teams and made them extremely tough and physical.
Yeah, very
and
tough.
Hard to play against. I mean, that was the game that they had Malik Willis back when he was not this Malik Willis. And, you know, I think took us to overtime. So, yeah, it's I think that would make more sense. I think Belichick makes more sense in Philly. I think we're all kind of waiting for Philly to fall apart and for Dallas as well, potentially, although I don't know that Belichick's going to want to deal with the whole Jones situation.
Jerry
honestly,
world.
Not even – I mean, Jerry's Jerry, but Belichick's probably going to want Stephen Jones' job too. He's probably going to want the control of the roster now.
And Jerry's going to step back, and he kind of sounds like he may be tempted to do it more, and that's bringing in Belichick. I will say this. And let me hear what you guys think of this. This is my – Sean McDermott, obviously coaching acumen for what he can do. He's on Andy Reid's staff in 02. That was a sick staff. Ron Rivera was on that staff. McDermott was as well. But he's not winning when it counts. And last year this team almost didn't make the playoffs. I don't know which direction they're going to go. Personally, if I'm the Buffalo Bills, you have Josh Allen, I'd go Belichick. Who knows this division better, the AFC East, than Belichick? And the bottom line is, I don't know if McDermott's that safe. When Belichick was in New England, 32 of 35 times with Tom Brady, they beat the Buffalo Bills. But I'm looking at that, you know, with Josh Allen there and thinking Belichick, he knows that division. That's what I do because, look, listen, McDermott can get you there. I don't know if he can get you over the hump. That happens. Belichick knows that division. I don't think they're going to make a move, but if they did, because McDermott was on thin ice a little bit last year.
Is Matt Patricia and Joe Judge your OCs and quarterbacks coaches?
I don't know what I would do, but I was just saying I'd put Belichick with Josh Allen because I think the quarterback combination we'd be looking for, and I want a guy that knows the division.
Yeah, but I would say the quarterback combo doesn't matter if you don't make the right OC hire. They ruined Mac Jones because the OC hire was terrible. So you would need to know who that guy's going to be. I think McDermott has been pretty good. If Mahomes didn't exist, Allen would probably have a Super Bowl. Yeah. That's what I would guess. And we'd be talking about his career a little differently. So if you are going to make that move, I think you need an assurance from, like, a Ben Johnson that you are for sure going to take the job if it becomes open. Because otherwise it just doesn't make a ton of sense to, you know, do away with the infrastructure, or if, you know, the OC leaves, you know, I don't know if Brady would get hired anywhere, but if he leaves and now you're looking for a slot to fill and need to, you know, almost fire the head coach to fill it with a OC from another team. But, I just feel like you kind of know most of the spots are going to open. If you're going to say Buffalo is going to go 11-6, make it to the playoffs,
you can't
lose to Baltimore or Kansas City again, I mean, how's that considered a bad season?
Well, I mean, right. Dallas exactly. And Jerry Jones, we design bad plays. I mean, throwing McCarthy under the bus 100%
on
that.
Yeah, because they get smashed in the playoffs.
Oh, they
That's
do.
That's a different story.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
I want to ask you, who's the second best coach in this division? Is it Peyton or is it Harbaugh? Okay.
Harbaugh.
Okay.
No question.
I'm with you
me.
On that.
Yeah, I think Harbaugh obviously brings an element there, you know, but again, it's like a lot of these teams in the division, I think they're throwing stuff at the wall. How can we beat Kansas City? I mean, you know, new coaches, new coordinators, new quarterbacks, new turnovers, new stars. Nothing seems to work for any of these three teams, no matter what it is.
Yeah, so I'd say Harbaugh has, again, a longer track record of doing it. He's been a great coach wherever he's been.
Absolutely.
He also makes fantastic hires. Like, Mike McDonald was his guy in Michigan. Now Minter is his guy. Everyone thought it was going to be the worst defense in the NFL. They're one of the best. It's because of the physicality, the toughness,
absolutely,
bringing in the right hire on the defense side
and
the of the
culture.
Ball.
I mean, he guys like playing for him.
The ultimate culture setter. You know, obviously the receiver position is a bit of a mess right now, but I think he did the right thing in taking Alt and making sure that his star quarterback is protected.
Yeah.
We went through this, the Tampa Super Bowl. If your quarterback's not protected, your offense cannot function. So even though Herbert just had a good game and they lost because he's throwing to guys who aren't, you know, number one receivers and all those things, it's easy enough to acquire those later down the road if you need to. Receivers are making a ton of money now. There are tons of trades available, you know, whether it's a Devontae or a Tyreek or an A.J. Brown. Guys become available. Who knows? Jamar Chase might just get so frustrated with Cincy lowballing him that he just says, I'm out of here, and then it's not going to work for me. now that guy becomes available. What if the Chargers trade 2 1s for him and pay him a bunch of money? Yeah. Now Herbert has Slater and all at tackles.
Out there.
They got a bunch of money inside. Ja'Marr Chase running downfield and McConkey doing his thing. All of a sudden, that's an amazing offense with now returning one of the best defenses from a unit that everyone said had one of the worst talent levels in the NFL. So, yeah, I think Harbaugh's far and away the second best
How
coach.
Difficult is that for Ault, who played left tackle all the time in Notre Dame, to switch to the right? Because he's been fantastic there. But how difficult is that moving from side to side?
It's very difficult. We like to use a more vulgar version of imagine trying to do things with your opposite arm
exactly,
that you're not used to doing.
It's like playing left and right.
People used to say that about Liljic because he switched sides. You know, at
guard. I always thought for defensive ends.
It's totally different.
I think it's crazy that teams flip sides the way they do. I think you should, for the most part, leave a guy on a side. Now, you look at T.J. Watt and they can just chip him every play because they know exactly where he's going to be every play. But, like, the skill set, some guys are better on one side because their right arm is more dominant for that inside arm or the other way around. It's very difficult. From what I've seen from Ault, he's producing at a high level, but he still doesn't look like comfortable, or he doesn't look as smooth and as efficient as he did in college. So he is going to be tremendous. It's going to take a couple years to get fully settled in over there. And you know, he got that knee injury a few weeks ago, so got to kind of fight through that throughout the course of the year.
We'll take a timeout here at Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe. I am curious who you guys think will be the next quarterback to win a Super Bowl besides Mahomes. I am curious at what your answer would be on that. But, yes, I'm with you on the Chargers. I think that team's going places. We'll take a timeout here, Buffalo Wild Wings in Olathe. Come back, one final segment. Welcome back to 96.5, The Fan, The Fan's Football Show. Jay Binkley, Mitch Schwartz, Desmond Moses. Here people are accusing me of watching the World Series, which I'm not. I'm focused in on football at this point. But here's the other thing, too. Someone on the text line says D-Hop and Kelsey. D-Hop's caught a ball every game he's ever played in the NFL. He's got the longest active streak in the NFL, 168. Wow. Kelsey at 164.
That's a lot of games.
That is.
He was the only one higher. They have the two longest active streaks catching the football in the NFL. Kelsey had this 117-game streak of three catches, but that was ended this year when he had one. But he still got a 164 and D-Hop 168. Wow. So it is interesting that those two guys have that. All right, guys, I ask you the question. Mahomes ain't going to win it every year. I mean, we'd like to say he could. Is it going to be from someone from the NFC, the AFC? Is it Lamar? Is it Josh? Is it Joe Burrow? Is it Jared Goff? Who's the next quarterback in your mind to win?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because if you go quarterbacks, you know, I'd say Josh Allen's the second best quarterback overall in the NFL. I think Lamar is a little bit better as a pure, like, regular season quarterback. It's almost like when the Rockets were really good at basketball and they were tearing through teams in the regular season. But once you get to the playoffs, obviously for them, they played five or seven times. You kind of get used to the style. You get used to Harden having the ball a bunch and you learn how to defend it.
You call him Lamar James Harden.
No, not at all. I'm just saying in terms of like, it seems like obviously he's been MVP multiple times.
Yeah,
they win
the success.
10, 12, 13, 14 games every year. Last year, I thought they were the best overall team that they've been since he's been there, and by far the best overall team in football throughout the course of the year. And it just feels like when teams have that huge game against him and they're able to fully game plan and take away, you know, the specific things that he does well or force him into things he doesn't do as well, he hasn't been as good in those situations. He's not a choke artist. He's not a guy who can't perform in the clutch, all those things. You don't get to be as good as he is without being able to win in the clutch. He just hasn't been able to get through the AFC to get to the Super Bowl and then obviously win the Super Bowl. So I still think overall Allen has the highest ceiling of anyone not named Pat because he's kind of opens up everything you can do in a playbook. Lamar's is more tailored to him, and what you can tailor to him is very, very advantageous in football. But Allen kind of opens up anything you could want to do, and you don't have to rely strictly on your quarterback to run as much, which can be scary for some teams. But I'd actually go with Jared Goff. I think the Lions are a great football team. I think they're, again, he wouldn't be one of the first five quarterbacks you say is going to win the Super Bowl next. But when you're talking about who's going to win the Super Bowl, I think about teams.
That 18-18 the other couple weeks ago was crazy.
Yeah, I feel like the Lions are fantastic. The Hutch injury sucks.
That was awful.
I honestly hope he doesn't come back for the Super Bowl just for him getting healthy long term. I don't want him to like force something early and then have after effects that last too long because he forced that. But they're just a good football team, man. Branch is an amazing player offensively. I love watching their O-line. Goff's been playing great. Got weapons. I think team-wise, it would be the Lions to win the Super Bowl, and because of that, it's going to be Goff as the quarterback.
Yeah. Well, here's a question for you, Desmond. What if Mahomes and Allen switch places? Who would have more rings?
That's a great question.
Or if Lamar switched places with Mahomes, would Baltimore win him, or would Lamar win with Andy Reid? I'm just curious what you would think.
I think if Josh Allen ends up in Kansas City, we're looking at a very similar situation.
Okay.
Andy Reid, you know, pulling the strings on that type of offense with that type of quarterback, a guy who can make all the throws, can extend the play, can, you know, kill your defense if after a long play and extend it with his legs. He's just a special guy, and they're similar in a lot of ways, but still very different. I think he's the most similar guy. As far as winning the Super Bowl next, I think it's my guy Lamar. That addition of Derrick Henry, I think, takes their team to a different level. You know, he's the home run hitter. It's rare in the NFL you have a home run hitter at running back.
Now
a lot
he's got
of times,
it's the biggest guy.
Yeah,
I think Lamar was actually better the year at Louisville after he won the Heisman.
Yeah, yeah.
They lost more games, but I thought he was actually better. Lamar's fun to watch. Probably my favorite guy to watch the NFL.
I mean, but you think big play, generally you're thinking over the top, you know, big passing plays. But, again, they got a home run hitter right in the backfield along with another one at quarterback. I think that team is just built to get over that hump this year if it's not Patrick and, you know, Kansas City
Chiefs. Of
course,
it matters where you're drafted, right, Mitch? Like if Tom Brady is drafted in Cleveland, he might be on the back of that T-shirt that someone's got all those different quarterbacks. He might be selling State Farm insurance by now rather than when it's – like it does matter where you're drafted. Like it does.
Oh, absolutely. That's why we're going to start seeing these quarterbacks realize – because you're in college, you're realizing how much power you have, how much money you can make. They're going to realize they have more influence in the draft than they used to. And, you know, once every 10 years there was a guy that influenced things in the draft. It's really been about 20 years since we had that, but – I think they're going to start doing that. Obviously, Deion this year is probably going to guide Shador to a certain team or away from teams is probably the better way to put it. Arch, when it becomes time, I mean, Peyton went back to school to avoid going to a certain team. That worked out for him. So, yeah, I think there's going to be some quarterbacks with some high-profile names and families.
And Arch worked working a little switcheroo.
So, I think quarterbacks are going to start being more intentional about, you know, where they're getting drafted. I think Caleb probably looked at Chicago and thought it was a pretty good situation. He probably had the most power in a long time for a quarterback to do a move. But, yeah, where you're drafted changes everything. And, like, no more than the quarterback position. Like, because it's the most important position, because you can be failed by coaching the most and you can be failed by your surroundings the most. Like, as an O-lineman, you can be pretty good even if you got bad quarterback play or bad offense. Like, if the quarterback's screwing you and dropping 11 yards deep, like, that's terrible. But for the most part, a good lineman's going to be a good lineman. Quarterback's not going to be a good quarterback in a bad situation. Like, we're seeing that, again, with Goff. McVay got the most out of him, but now he's grown the last few years. Baker, the progression he's had. Darnold, even though they lost, you know, progression he's had. You just, Geno, I mean, quarterbacks will continue to get better with age. It's nice that they're now getting second and third chances to prove that, like, hey, I'm 28 or 30. Yeah. I got floated around for a few years, went to a couple different teams, and now I can finally, you know, use my experience for good. And so that's pretty cool to see because in the NFL, man, once you get thrown about, once you go from being seen as a starter to seen as a backup, it's incredibly difficult to get back to being seen as a starter in teams' eyes. So that's been the surprising thing with these quarterbacks.
A lot of resilience, though, and I think that's the beauty that these guys, the organizations, the teams are realizing veteran quarterbacks are a valuable thing, especially the way these guys go down.
Great stuff. Mitch Schwartz, as usual. Desmond Moses stopping here. I appreciate you guys. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks to Buffalo Wild Wings out here in Olathe. Thanks to Quinn Morris back in the studio producing the operation. Appreciate it. Out on Chipman Road in Lee's Summit next week. I'm sure Mitch will have the advertisements every day on that coming up next. Anyway, you guys enjoy yourself. See you guys later.